Blog Talk Radio.
As 2019 and the second decade of the 21st century come to an end, many of us may still be grieving for the loss of friends and lovers and family members. Have you ever wondered, is it possible for me to connect and communicate with my loved ones who are no longer with me? Today's speakers share a poignant story, and I'm sure you will really enjoy this. Stay tuned. Welcome to my radio show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and love lessons for your soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can, and often does, get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Catherine Weisenberg made it possible for Jocelyn Montanaro to communicate with her husband, Kevin, who was dying of cancer, both while he was in a coma and after his death. How was this possible? Catherine describes her work as dipping into an always available stream of consciousness. So I am really excited to be speaking with both of you today at the end of this year, giving people hope and inspiration for the next year, 2020, and the decades to follow. So I'd love to welcome both of you, Jocelyn and Catherine.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin right away. I'm going to start by asking each of you one at a time to tell about your background. So, Jocelyn, please tell us about your background, your marriage, your struggles, and how you connected with Catherine, and then I'll ask Catherine about how she works. But tell your version of what has happened.
Well, I'll try to give you a short version because that could take your whole radio show. My background is I'm an attorney by training, and so was my husband, actually, Kevin. And when he was in a coma after surgery to remove a second brain tumor, he had a massive stroke in the recovery room, and everything went downhill from there. And and he'd been in a coma for a month, almost 26 days. And my sister Vicky, who had been friends with Catherine for years and had done, they're called writings, which Catherine will explain when she talks, encouraged me to connect with Catherine and get a writing to get guidance from God, or maybe even from Kevin. Catherine had done writings before with people in comas. And so even though I was very mad at God, if there was one, for killing my husband, pretty much is what I looked at it as, and I'd been praying like crazy, of course, even though I wasn't religious, because everyone does in those circumstances, I finally relented and agreed to do a writing because I really felt like I had nothing to lose. But I was adamantly opposed to it for a long time because I just didn't really believe it was possible. And if there was a God, like I said, I was, you know, pretty mad at him. But then I had a did the writing with Catherine, and I was able to connect with my husband in his coma, who thought he was just dreaming. And during that writing, he actually was able to wake himself up, and that began the next phase of my relationship with my husband and also my friendship with Catherine.
Oh, so after we introduce Catherine, I'd like to hear what you meant by that he woke himself up and how you knew that. But let's just hear from Catherine first. So, Catherine, please tell us your background and training and what led to your writing and what this writing is.
Well, I have an unusual skill set, which you kind of previewed, which is that for the last 30 years, I've been facilitating conversations and connections and dialogues with God, deceased people, and people in comas. And this started when I was in graduate school studying communication, of all things, the big universal cosmic joke. So I have a graduate degree in communication, and my background is that I've done this consulting work, although I've also taught at the college level and, you know, lots of other things. And I've used my gift quietly for the last 30 years or so, people I worked by referral only, and so I just said if someone found me so off the grid, then God had sent them. So I've done hundreds and hundreds of these kinds of sessions with people, and my process is it's not woo-woo-y, it's just like we're talking now, Dr. Erica. I just mm-hmm. believe that we're all sitting in a stream of connectivity and energy, and for whatever reason, I'm able to put my antenna up or whatever, and I get lots of information. And as Jocelyn in our book, Beyond Ever After, talks about, is very specific information, and it's dialogue, full-on question-answer dialogue. And to retain a lasting record of this, I write it all down, and our book contains six of those actual writings that Jocelyn did with her husband, Kevin, while he was in the coma, when he roused himself, she was about ready to take him home from the hospital to care for him at home. And through me said, you know, I don't want to go home and have that in our house and have that be our children's memory. And also he said his last goodbye through the gift that I have at hospice. And then after he died and revealed what his death experience was to Jocelyn, and it's quite an amazing but very true and inspirational experience and story. So Jocelyn can tell you more about that.
All right. In a moment I'll ask, but I would like to share with you that I have been studying Joe Dispenza's work, and he seems to be scientifically researching and providing some kind of evidence for what you're talking about, for the energetic field and the frequencies there. So it's beautiful work, and you've been doing it so long before anyone understood
I know Joe well. And also Dr. Gary Swartz, who's a professor out of the University of Arizona and wrote the foreword to our book, he studies this quite extensively as well, verifying, you know, evidential mediumship, although I don't call myself a medium or a channel. I am a communication facilitator and consultant.
Good title. And so now let's get back to Jocelyn and, you know, how did you know this was really happening? I mean, what was the opening?
Well, when Catherine does a writing, there's always a God introduction, which is, and when I say God, I mean that in the most, you know, loose sense, because everyone has a different viewpoint of what that is, source, Allah, whatever you, you know, want to call it. So there's always a God introduction, which is very specific and personal to what's kind of a preview of what's coming, kind of lays the foundation. And then Catherine said, I hear a man's voice. And I said, is it Kevin? And he said, of course it's me. And I've been trying to let you know I'm okay. And then he asked a few general questions about what was happening and what the kids were doing. And I thought, you know, Catherine could have heard from, because she's friends with my sister and still is, you know, what my kids' names were, because he mentioned them by name and said a few kind of specific things. And I asked him kind of a test question. I said, well, what's the last thing you remember? And he shared something that was conveyed to me by the surgeon right after the surgery. And the only people that heard it were my two kids. And we never really repeated it to anybody, because right afterwards the artery tore in his head in the recovery room and everything went downhill from there. And what she shared was, she said to me, you know, because, you know, when a loved one has a surgery or you're with someone who has a surgery, afterwards the doctor comes out and tells you how everything went and gives you kind of a report. She said, you know, everything went fine, but before I get into the details, you know, I have to tell you, your husband is just the nicest man. As we were wheeling him into surgery, he reached up and took my hand and said, thank you for doing this, Linda. And she conveyed that to me, and it was so typical of something he would say. And so when I asked him, what's the last thing remember, he said that, like verbatim. And so I knew in that moment that it was actually Kevin. My world tilted on its axis. You know, everything I ever thought about anything completely went out the window, because I was communicating through Catherine with my husband, who was in a coma. And then he also shared many other very specific details about the music we listened to on the drive down the night before and the things we talked about. And so, and then during that writing, as we said earlier, he said, well, and he thought he was dreaming, that he didn't realize that he just thought he was in a post-anesthesia dream, so he wasn't really trying to wake himself up. And so he wanted to conduct an experiment, and he wanted to tap his fingers. And my sister was in the hospital room with him, and I was at a landline at the hotel and talking to Catherine, who was in Washington State, so this is all by phone. And so he did an experiment where he said, I'm going to tap my fingers. And so he reached out for my sister's hand, and I called her, and I said, what's he doing? And he was tapping his fingers, and then he said, okay, I'm going to stop. And he did that a few more times. And then he said, okay, I realize now I'm not dreaming. I'm going to try and wake myself up. And so after that, he did. He started to wake up. And like I always say, it's not like he sat up the next day and asked me for a cup of coffee. That would have been impossible. He'd had 5 surgeries and brain surgeries in 26 days and was loaded on pain medications and other things. And but he did start to talk. And a speech therapist came in and asked him some questions, which he could answer. He could lift one leg and lift the other leg and lift one thumb up and make responses to the doctor's commands, which was completely different from the coma he had been in, you know, just a few days before.
And were you in the room with him at that time?
Yes, I was. I was. And
it
was
so you were able to
amazing.
See that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I never left his side, Dr. Erica. I lived in that hospital for the whole time we were there. I slept in the same bed with him. I'd leave once in the morning to run back to the hotel, take a shower, brush my teeth, grab some coffee, and come right back, because I'd been waiting for him mm-hmm. for a month to wake up. And then once he finally started to, I never, you know, I didn't want to leave. So I was there for everything.
So Catherine, tell us what the process is. What really happens?
Well, as I said, it's, I've worked with other coma people too, and they all report they're dreaming. I mean, think of it, Dr. Erica, we wake up every single morning. We don't do, I mean, we may set mm-hmm. an alarm if we have something, but we just expect we're going to wake up. There's nothing that we do in particular to wake ourselves up. And what Kevin, when Kevin received the information that he was in a, that he wasn't dreaming, and Jocelyn was going through, no, you're in UCLA and you've got five, you know, you've had five more surgeries and I'm really scared, then he was ingenious enough to come up with this experiment to tap his finger. And I thought it meant tap his finger. I actually, when I was on the phone with him, thought they were together. But what he did was more ingenious, is he wanted to tap his finger, so use his brain to send his body a message. Tap my finger was his message to himself to tap his finger. And once he could do that, and even on the phone he said, I'm doing it. Now I'm going to stop. I'm doing it all through me. I'm in Washington State. We're all on the phone. He realized mm-hmm. that he was dreaming, and then he roused himself to consciousness. So I think, and clearly I've worked with lots and lots of people who've been in comas, or their loved ones before they passed, you know, have been unconscious, and they report actual conversations word for word. So people are conscious. Our brains have far more capabilities in that energetic field, however you want to describe it. And, you know, we're much more than what our linear mind might think. You know, think about how many people who someone is on their deathbed and they're waiting for their child to arrive, or, you know, and then as soon as that person comes, they're able to go. You know, I believe we all have these abilities. My gift set is, you know, pretty unique, but I think that we're all capable of this. And that's what we want with our book, Beyond Ever After, is for people to trust those experiences when they have them, not just with people in comas and you hope your loved ones hear and know, but when we think of someone who's gone on that we love and lives in our heart, if we get the sense that they're with us or we feel them, that we don't push it away and say, oh, that's silly, that's just my imagination, that we open up that, no, they really are with us and know what's going on. And Jocelyn in the book has a lot of those experiences where Kevin's telling her things after he's passed away about the private things, equally as stunning as how he roused himself and revealed that conversation with the surgeon wheeling into surgery. So I don't know how any of it works. I just know in 30 years it does, and it's a gift to be of service to help people in these sorts of situations and all life's challenges. You know, the God writings are all about that. We all want to grow and evolve and expand, and that's what these sorts of experiences let us do, whether they're facilitated by someone like me or they're just our own direct experience. And Jocelyn's story is she went from a skeptic, non-believer, God angry, mad he's killing my husband, to someone who has faith and strength and resolve and resiliency to have handled the loss of her husband and raise her children alone and with faith. And she knows that they'll be reunited after death, which is also a big message in the book.
So
yes, I
asked
him that.
Jocelyn. Yeah, go ahead. Did you speak?
I was going to say, in his first after-death writing, I asked him that, are we going to be reunited? And I was really worried because I had felt like I had, you know, pissed off a God I didn't even believe in by being furious at him for killing my husband. I mean, I know he wasn't killing my husband, but it feels like that when it was happening to me. It felt like, you know, you could make this not happen, and you're not. And that was a really, you know, kind of bitter pill to swallow. But although Kevin had said very early on that death is not a failure, and it's a transition. It's not a failure, and I needed to not look at it like that. And so I asked him, you know, are we going to be reunited? And he said yes, that he'd had a, and this is in the first after death writing, and like Catherine said, there's 6 complete writings in the book Beyond Ever After, that we were going to be reunited, and it wasn't going to, it was going to be like not 1 second had passed. And that has really kind of sustained and nurtured me, because there's been a lot of long days and trying times, you know, being a single mom. My youngest son had just turned 13 when he died, and I had an older son who was having some pretty significant issues, and it's hard to do it all alone. And when those days are long and you're feeling overwhelmed, to know for me that when my days on earth are done, I'm going to be back with him, and it's going to be like a blink of an eye, it sustains me and kind of keeps me going at times when I really feel overwhelmed and that the problems here are just too much.
Well, there's a real truth to that, because if you have had a friend, any friend that you were close to, and you don't see them, I have a friend that I hadn't seen in 33 years. And we went out for lunch, and it was like time, there had been no time in between.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
We can feel that way, even in this lifetime, so afterwards, certainly. So, Catherine, I wanted to ask, can anybody do this? Can anybody communicate with a partner, or is there some kind of skill they have to develop? Do you get into some kind of state? How does it happen?
Well, for me, it's just always available. But, you know, what I think is the real truth of this is that we, even though we lose our loved ones, we're still connected to them through our heart. Our heart is a portal to all this unseen field of energy and love and connection. And so I don't know if it's a practice or if there's some, I'd like to be able to say, these are the 5 steps, do this, and, you know, because I always joke and say, I don't have a white phone. It's not like I'm picking up the white phone and saying, call Jerry to the phone. But what I do believe is that that love and that connection inside our heart is stronger than our grief, than our loss, than our fear. That really, that divine connection, and it's innate and it's our birthright. We all have it. And so when we have these experiences of connection and we think, oh, I smelled grandma's perfume. Oh, that's silly. I'm just imagine that. That we say, no, that is real. And we allow ourselves that reality of that being true. If I think grandma's here, then she's here. She's with me. That love is there, just like you and your friend reconnecting over 30 years. That is a vibrant, and it has its own life. It has its own lifespan. It has its own invigorating qualities. And what I think is that the more we're open to possibility, the more that we can go from being narrow and microscopic about our experiences in our life to being more open palm, especially these experiences of grace and connection, then the more they happen. It's just like in life. What I expect to see and what I'm looking for confirming evidence, I'm going to get more of. And when I'm open, I'm going to see more. And I think that spiritual things sometimes lay on more the periphery. They're not as big and booming and loud. But once they catch our eye and they catch our notice and our heart says, yes, this is real, then more of those kinds of experiences. In the book, we talk about signs Jocelyn received from Kevin. I talk about them as divine synchronicities in the book. But I think that we're all capable of opening to that, and that gives us this joy and peace. And there's not a technique. I think it's more inherent and innate in us, and we've just forgotten. On our website, beyondeverafter.com, we ask people to submit their stories, because what we found with the book is readers tell us, I had this experience, I had that, oh my goodness. They're coming out of the woodwork sharing their experiences, and I think that this is normal. We're all having these experiences, and yet we don't talk about them because we don't want people to think we're weird or whatever. So I hope that this creates that open space to talk about it, to own our experiences. So,
and I think people
I have a few things. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think people dismiss them when they have them. You know, like for me, they often involve a squirrel or particular songs. Like I'll be thinking about Kevin, which I do constantly, and on the radio, the next song or on my playlist, the next song will be either Brown Eyed Girl from Van Morrison or Something in the Way She Moves by James Taylor. Always one of those two. Always. Or I think we all have these, like Catherine says, experiences, but are afraid to share them because you don't really think, oh, well, that's just a coincidence. But I don't think it is. In fact, I'm certain that it's not. I think that the people who have gone before us that still love us are very present in our lives and try to convey in different ways, especially when we feel like we need it, that they are still there and that their love is still there and that we are not alone, even if we feel like we are.
Beautiful. But I have another question, I guess, for Catherine. What about people? Not everybody had a beautiful love. Not everybody had unconditional love. So what about people who were divorced or were separated or were angry and then their spouse died? Have you worked with people in that state?
Well, and I think that I don't think that having had a loving relationship is what makes it possible. I mean, I've said that it's that love that connects us. And I think we can have healthy boundaries from spirit as well as we can as human beings, you know, in an abusive relationship or whatever. We're not subject. I mean, I think that's where a lot of this got the bad rap of ghosts and, you know, hauntings. And I think that's that energy of discontent, but it's not what we have to allow. I mean, I think we set boundaries. And yes, there's lots of resolution. And frequently, when I work with clients under those circumstances, let's face it, life can be tough, and relationships and navigating them are not all a big bowl of frosty whipped cream or cherries. So in those things, it's very healing. And oftentimes people will come back and say through in a session, let's say, like what I'm facilitating, and say, I'm sorry, and this is what I did. Oftentimes, parents, even grandparents, even people generationally back, can apologize, can say, I misunderstood, now I understand, this wasn't my intention, all those kinds of things. So we can also continue to make amends with one another. And we do know that. I mean, you're a therapist, so you know that that's possible, that we can connect with that energy, whether it's in a body or not in a body, and we can make those kinds of evolutionary and resolution kinds of things. So when I said what I meant is that we innately have this capability to not be bound in this perceptual three-dimensional reality all the time, that we see examples of that in kindness, we extend ourselves all the time to people we don't know in loving grace. So I just have a much, in 30 years and hundreds, if not thousands of these, I just know what is possible is much greater than what we think, or what our mind would have us believe. That fear and hurt and pain are contracting things that don't open us up to these greater possibilities, to our true nature, which is love, which is expansion, which is connection, which is divine.
And I wanted to add something there about the heart, that you said that love is the thing that opens us up and connects us. Well, studies have shown at the Heart Math Institute that the heart has 5,000 times the magnetism of the brain. So just a little scientific fact in there.
I know. We did a talk, linking the concepts in our book to heart math concepts. So you're right in there, Dr. Erica.
Wow.
That's...
Yeah,
Definitely. Haven't
seen your book yet. So it's
well, you're in for
what
treat.
You're talking about.
Yeah.
So, Jocelyn, how has it been for you remaining connected, but your husband is not here? How does that affect your thinking and your feeling?
Well, you know, Dr. Erica, I know he's always with me. And, you know, people often ask me what my takeaway from this whole experience is, because I feel really blessed to have had it. I mean, I know Catherine has done hundreds of these writings or more over the years, and there's so many stories she has of people. I mean, I'm just one of many that she could tell. But for me, I don't fear death, and that is huge. I think most people fear death because it's this big black box for them. And I know that there's going to be an afterlife for me. Although, as Catherine says, it's not a car wash. You take yourself with you, which makes me want to live very intentionally and, you know, be good to myself, be good to other people, and remember that every little thing matters. And while I don't sweat the small stuff and I often don't sweat the big stuff, I really try to kind of interact with people from my heart and not my analytical lawyer mind, which is often a little biting, you know. So it's definitely changed the way that I view, I mean, how can it not, view my days here on earth that are left and what I hope I experience, you know, after the fact.
It's beautiful. So, Catherine, what would you like, what message would you like to give to people about the possibilities for love, for continued love, for unconditional love?
Well, I would say that we are all divinely created and connected, regardless of your faith affiliation or how you perceive, if you call it God or Buddha or universal love or source, or that innately we are much bigger than what we've been taught to believe that we are, and that we are these energy waves, this frequency of love, and that we know is powerful and cannot be measured. I don't know that we'll ever see it measured. And science isn't the place to tell us it's true. We know what's true for us. And our book, Beyond Ever After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey Through Death and the Afterlife, is all about that. It's all about saying, I'm having these extraordinary experiences, and I'm going to trust that experience, and I'm going to widen in that experience. You know, a mother who just gets the inkling, or father, to go check on their child and sees they're doing something dangerous. Even those sorts of examples that we say, wow, that was a coincidence. The next time we have, oh, that must have been a coincidence. I just ask you to pause and think, was it? What was it? Was it a grace? Was it a blessing? And to trust our own knowing and our own experiences that our loved ones are with us, and we're always connected. And grief, when we lose someone we love, it's crushing, and it can also lay this sort of insulation bubble wrap around us because we're so raw. And as that lifts, and people say, I don't feel them, I can't feel them with me. But as that grief starts to dissipate like a fog, then we can see and we can feel more. And we hope that it opens up the conversation. This book is a 4-part narrative: Jocelyn's story, Kevin, God, and the spiritual context provided by me. And so it takes you into this story. We've even had 30-year-old men say it reads like an adventure novel, you know. So that there is wonder and magic, and it's easy to get caught in life and all its challenges, and I have the utmost respect for that. But grace and wonder and love and this vibrant connection, which is, as we all know, at the end of our life, is the only thing that matters anyway, is with us always. And to seize those opportunities and to be that open palm and to say yes where those feelings and experiences come, and more to grace and love and the power of connection, which is our birthright.
And I want to quote something that you say, Catherine. You say that we are created by and for love. Help and connection are always one breath, one prayer, one realization, or one awakening away. And I wanted to share that my favorite saying is that where there is love, there is a way. And you are proving this every time you help people to connect with these loved ones.
You know, Dr. Erica,
thank
I have
you
to say, for everything that Catherine has written in the book, that is my favorite line. And I can't tell you, it's so interesting, you would have everything in there that you'd make that quote, because my friends and people who I know that have read the book, I mean, there's people who've read it that neither one of us know, but there's people who've read it that both of us know. Every single person has said to me, God, this one comment that she made, it's really resonated and stuck with me. So I'm really happy that you picked that quote to put it out there, because I think it really sums up the message of the book.
And so, Jocelyn, what would you say to people who may be dealing with a partner or someone they love, a child, a parent, someone they love, who is sick, maybe in hospice, or has passed already? What would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them that there's nothing you can really do to stop it from hurting, and that it's the worst experience you can go through, to lose someone you love. But having had the experience I did with Kevin, I have a completely different view of it now. In fact, my mother just recently died in August, and she was in the same hospice facility that Kevin was in the same month that he was there, 6 years later. But I had a completely different experience, because I wasn't worried about what was going to happen to her afterwards. I know she was worried, but I just said, you know, I don't look at your death as a failure. I think it's a transition, and I don't know what your experience is going to be after the fact, but I believe that you're going to have one. And it made me have it be like a part of life. It didn't feel scary to me. I felt like I was able to comfort her and other people, because I I just, in my heart, I just knew that she was going to be okay. And in fact, since then, sister has had a riding with her, and she's fine. She's okay. I just would like people to know that death is not a failure. It just feels like such a failure because it's an ending in for us. And it feels like, you know, something's gone wrong when someone's died. But it hasn't gone wrong. It's just the next thing.
And there are many cultures around the world where they look at death that way. You know, where
yes.
It is just part of life. But we don't see it. We're pretty fearful.
I understand that. And one thing Kevin said in the book, which is I think what Catherine's quotes says the same thing, is he just said it's all love. Love, love, love. It's all love. And I think if we all treated each other with love from the heart and not acted out of love, even to the person in the grocery store behind us or in front of us who has more than 15 items in the express line, everything would be better. You know, everything would be better. So even though the book, there's death in the book, I think it's more a story about how you live life and not how you live death.
Beautiful. And what you just shared about love is that it starts with you and it starts with me, offering that love, maybe even especially to the person that's doing the wrong thing because they don't feel love. That's why they're doing something negative. So before we end, please tell people how they can get in touch with you or get the book or anything else that you're offering.
Well, we have a website, beyondeverafter.com. beyondeverafter.com, and our book is available on Amazon, Beyond Ever After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey Through Death in the Afterlife, and it's Catherine Weisenberg and Jocelyn Montanaro. And we also have the opportunity for your listeners to, if they want to share their own story of connection and love, we have that opportunity on our website too, because again, we hope that people start talking about these things. We're all having these experiences, and some of them are the most intimate and cherished experiences of our lives, and yet we keep them secret. So we're hoping that through the book, people feel that love and express that love and share, at least with their friends and loved ones, hey, you know, last night, Grandpa's phone, the antique phone on the wall, he had rang, and it's not hooked up. Because we know those kinds of things are happening. We hear them. So,
absolutely.
And that's wonder and magic. And there's the world needs a lot more wonder and magic, in my opinion. So let's exalt that and give that some good news and sharing.
Well, thank you. Thank you to both of you for a beautiful story and perfect at the end of this year to help people get through some of those emotional hard times and feel the love.
Yes. Yeah.
So
it's always wrapped in the heart.
Jocelyn, Catherine, thank you both for being here. The time is running out. So it's been delightful.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It's been fun. And I just want to tell all your listeners, I hope the next decade is your best ever.
Yes, thank you for all of us. And to my listeners, I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, where maybe you can get some inspiration or apply for a Healing Through Love session. And I wish you a wonderful 2020 and way beyond. Bye for now.